With regard to the waiver argument made, what our opponent's brief does with regard...
Can I move you to the whereby clause?
I'm sorry?
Do you mind if I move you to the
I'm happy to move to the whereby clause, Judge Moore.
So you heard the questions that I was asking your opposing counsel. What do you think the test should be for when a whereby clause ought to be treated as a limitation? I mean, it is in the body of the claim. This is not like the preamble. So when should a whereby clause be treated as a limitation?
Well, I do think, as we said in our brief, Your Honor, that the Catalina decision that talks about preamble sets forth a lot of principles that are meaningful to this inquiry with regard to the whereby clause as well. They're bookends to the claim. This whereby clause is simply stating the intended result.
And that's in the body of the claim. I mean, aren't elements in the body of the claim presumably limitations?
Well, except that if you look at this court's decisions in Minton and Hofer, for example, you'll see that in effect the court has adopted a presumption that whereby clauses are not limitations.
Okay, so show me where the presumption is in this case. I have them here. I don't see the word presumption anywhere.
I don't think the word presumption is used. I think that it's the per curiam.
I think you just overstated it.
Ordinarily, I believe, if I remember the word correctly.
Show me where in the opinion you think it creates something akin to a presumption. Hofer, it would be on page 1329. If you want to go there,
okay.
Or Minton, I can refer you to the right page there if it would help.
1381.
Excuse me just a second. I think that what you see at 1329 is the language of the per curiam opinion that says it is correct that a whereby clause generally states the result of the patented process. And then it goes on to say, however, and this is what I believe is properly read as an exception to this ordinary rule, when the whereby clause states a condition that is material to patentability, it cannot be ignored in order to change the substance of the invention. And Judge Rader, I think that answers your question or your inquiry to my friend on the other side. This is not material to patentability. It doesn't contain steps. It doesn't contain structure. And for all of these, I've heard that it adds two additional limitations, but there's no method step in there, there's no structure. And
why isn't the method step providing access? There's a difference between generating something and decoding it. It could then be used internally by the system, and never the user could be given access. Why isn't giving access a separate step?
And I think that the capability is in fact inherent. And that means that even under the test that they're proposing...
No, oh, come on. My computer processor decodes something, that doesn't mean inherently I have access to it. I mean, it could be beyond a veil of software which I don't have access to. It's not inherently accessible simply because your processor is doing something.
Well, but and that I guess brings up the fact that this whereby clause until the remand was never construed. And Finisar never asked for a construction of it. And we think the more natural reading is the one that Judge Prost was giving in the earlier argument, which is that it simply states a capability. It might even require some additional things. It might require some additional things to be done. But those steps provide that capability once you've done all of that. And the capability is not to actually get it onto a screen, but whereby subscribers can be informed. Maybe informed if you add something else. It may be informed if you put it through an algorithm. But ultimately, this court's decisions, again, Minton and Hofer say material to patentability. This was not material to patentability.
It's
and the
interesting what
Minton
says,
that.
Though. Minton says we're not going to give any weight to it if it's just stating an intended result. Is that different than saying, is there a way of recognizing that it is part of the claim and it receives all the importance that any part of the claim should receive, even though we're going to give no weight to it if it states only an intended result?
Sure, no limiting weight, I think, would be what you would give to it. But it still does give, perhaps it explains the utility of the claim for purposes of Section 101.
Why wouldn't that be relevant to seeing if it distinguishes over prior art?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of your question.
Why isn't that, even that amount of weight, relevant to distinguishing over prior art?
I think what you'd then have to do is to look to the prosecution and see if it was in fact used to distinguish over prior art. And it wasn't. And that's what we're saying in our brief, that this is not material to patentability and it wasn't considered so by the examiner.
Does this, I'm getting to the point, does this really add something that Gexy doesn't disclose?
Not really, no. I mean, it's if you look at page 62,
for example. If you're right that it's only stating an intended result, then Gexy ought to have the same result in it, right?
That's exactly, and that is our position. And
how do you reach that position?
Well, if you look at page 62, for example, of Gexe, the Gexe reference, it contains, and this is at A29068 of the record, it says the time code is used for various purposes, such as for display on the screen, for access of time-coded pages transmitted at precise times, or simply as an extension of page numbers, in which case it loses its significance as an expression of time. But it's the first part of that sentence that discloses that. In addition,
so your argument, as I understand it, is that even if we construe the whereby clause as a limitation, Gexy discloses displaying it on the screen, and therefore it's obvious when you combine video architect.
That's absolutely the case. That's absolutely the case. And it's quite clear that both